The school holidays are upon us, and tens of thousands of New Zealand children will head to their screens to avoid being bored, especially now that it's winter. Our next topic is boredom, which mightn't by definition sound very exciting. It didn't sound that appealing when Iggy Pop sang about it.
I'm bored. I'm the chairman of the board.
The days when all the parents of Aotearoa could be chairpersons of the board and had the time to involve themselves in structured activities for their children have gone to a large extent. Although, of course, there are holiday programs and parents still try and take annual leave to coincide with school breaks and so on. The question is, if you're about to give in and let your youngsters run riot on Rust or Fortnite, whether there's anything wrong with them just being bored. A recent study, you've probably heard a version of this before, a recent study in the journal Academy of Management Discoveries has confirmed that boredom sparks both productivity and creativity. Dr. Sandy Mann is a senior psychology lecturer at the University of Central Lancashire in the UK. She's the author of The Upside of Downtime, Why Boredom is Good. Good morning.
Hello there.
Thank you for giving us time at the end of your day.
No problem at the start of your day.
Indeed it is. The study I was referring to in my introduction was in adults, I think. But boredom. Now, you've written a book about the upside of downtime. To what extent do findings about boredom apply to children and teens as well?
Oh, they apply enormously, because I think that today's parent is really scared of their child, whether they're a child or a teenager, they're really scared of them being bored. And I think we're into this kind of competitive parenting thing where we've got to be constantly stimulating our children. And if we're not, then we're failing them. So every time they cry that they're bored, we feel like we've got to rush around and provide appropriate intellectual stimulation. And if we don't, then they're going to lose the edge and they're going to fall behind. And, you know, so I think we're afraid of our kids being bored. So I think it's really relevant to today's children.
You've run your own studies, which I'll ask you about. In this one, they had people sort bowls of beans, picking the beans out by colour one by one. Other people had more interesting activities to do. And to cut a long story short, the bean counters proved more inventive in later testing. What was going on in their heads? Because you might know this, Sandy.
I do, because actually I think bean counting sounds a lot more fun than the study I did, the similar study I did, which was getting people to copy phone numbers out of a phone book. I think given the choice, I'd rather do the bean counting. But what we find is that when you're really bored and doing a really boring activity, and by that, it's usually something that's really repetitive and meaningless. I think that's really important that it's meaningless. And it's like, what the hell? Why am I doing this? You know, there's no point to it. What happens is that your brain will create its own entertainment, if you like, and it will stimulate itself. It will go off on journeys. You'll start daydreaming. Your mind will start wondering. I'm sure your listeners can relate to this whenever they're in a boring meeting or something like that. And sometimes it's a challenge to stop your mind wondering and daydreaming. But that mind wandering and daydreaming is a brilliant resource that our brain has. And it's something that's been found for a number of years in a number of studies to be quite key to creativity. So that's the key here, that when you're bored, your mind wanders, you daydream, and that can lead to increased creativity.
If in the school holidays, you know, you're on Fortnite all day, although Fortnite's fallen off the radar a bit, but you know what I mean, if you're gaming all day on a computer, your brain, I presume, is being neurally stimulated, but essentially in a kind of useless way?
It's passive. It's passive stimulation in that you are not having to stimulate your brain yourself. You're not having to find its entertainment. So it's been done for you. You're not learning to solve your own problem. But really crucially, you're not actually having to solve that boredom that with daydreaming and mind wandering. So when you're playing Fortnite, and actually there are some benefits to playing Fortnite, but not playing it all day probably, but there are some benefits. But when you're doing something like that, you're not allowing your mind to wander. You're very involved in the game. There's no mind wandering, no daydreaming. If there is, you kind of lost it. You've lost the plot and you're probably out of the game. So what's really important for kids in the school holidays is that you get some downtime, some time to have to create your own activity. Go and build a den, go and create something out of newspaper, do something just to amuse yourself because you're bored.
Okay, but the key is meaningless, you say. The key is actually being bored, that's important.
It's surprisingly important. And I think in today's society, we've invested an awful lot of time and energy into not being bored. And we're constantly trying to create ways to swipe and scroll the boredom away. But in actual fact, I think we're getting more bored than ever. I say I think because we've never really researched this beyond the past 15, 20 years. So we don't know that we're getting more bored than ever. But certainly we shouldn't be bored. Boredom should be an emotional relic of our evolutionary history. We shouldn't know what boredom is anymore. We've got so much to entertain us. In fact, we've got the world at our fingertips and yet we're still bored. You know, it shouldn't be that way. We should be so stimulated all the time that we don't even know what boredom is anymore.
Okay. If we can't swipe and scroll our boredom away, very nice phrase, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
If every time the phone comes out of our pocket, it's making our boredom worse, if you know what I mean, why?
I know exactly what you mean. And I've thought about this very carefully. And I think that there's a couple of reasons. Well, maybe more than a couple. One is that it's quite a repetitive action. And if you remember at the beginning, I talked about repetition as being a keystone, a trigger for boredom. So we're doing the same thing. It's swiping, it's scrolling. It's the same activity, the same neural activity, the same physical activity. So that's one problem. The other problem is that it's very passive entertainment. We're not actually having to do anything for ourselves. Our minds can become quite numb. You become quite glazed. And I've experienced that. And you just mindlessly swiping and scrolling. You're not really engaging with the material. You're not really interacting with it, even though in theory you can do. But the other problem, the final issue, I think, with it is that it lowers our threshold to boredom because we get addicted to novelty. And the thing about swiping and scrolling is that our attention spans get shorter and shorter because we're always looking for the next bit of novelty, the next new thing that we can find on the internet. And actually we're primed, as humans, we're primed to seek novelty because we get a dopamine hit, which is that feel-good chemical, when something new happens. So it's very rewarding to have something new, but the more new stuff we have, it's quite addictive, this dopamine. The more new stuff we have, the more we want. So we need more and more new novelty and fast-moving and fast-changing situations and pace of life just to stop us from being bored.
So the digital age is making boredom more profound, you think?
I believe it is because, in the good old days, whatever they were, the pace of life was slower and we could tolerate boredom more. We could tolerate downtime more. You know, we didn't have our phones to whip out of our pockets when we had a few moments. Instead, we stared into space or we spoke to strangers on the train and we engaged in sort of more creativity. But now we're doing more, you know, we're getting our phones out, we're doing more, but we're sort of achieving less because it's mindless, it's repetitive, it's stimulating, creating more and more need for dopamine.
Speaking of the strangers on the train, all the people who have buds in their ears while they commute and phones in their hands in the shopping malls and music always on in their cars, whatever. What, Sandy, what is your advice to them?
So the music is okay as long as it's not too engaging, really. But what I advise commuters to do is to do what I do. I commute to work. I have an hour's commute. Actually, I'm not on a train. I'm in a car. But I very often switch off the radio. I shouldn't really be saying that on this station, should I? But not this station. You wouldn't want to switch this off. But generally, sometimes you just need a little bit of downtime. And the reason that I have to be careful what I say is because obviously this radio station is so stimulating and exciting and entertaining,
yes,
and educational that people won't be able to daydream and their minds won't wander. So if you want to daydream and you want your mind to wander, you need to listen to a more boring radio station. But failing that, you're going to have to switch off and just have a little bit of downtime sometime in your life.
Typically, if you let yourself be truly bored, Sandy, what is the general upside? Will you notice the benefit?
Right. So what I can tell you is that I did this with people. I got people, dragged people off the streets in Preston in England. That's about 40 miles north of Manchester. And when I said I dragged them off willingly off the street into a soundproof cubicle where there was no stimulation at all. We asked them to leave their phone behind. Not many people agreed to do that, but those that did, we got them into a situation where there was literally nothing to do. And we wanted to see what would happen to them. You know, would they go mad? Would they go stir crazy? What would happen? And we found that some people couldn't take it and they ran out screaming, and that was fine. But those people that sat through it told us afterwards that at the beginning they found it really difficult and even stressful. But then once they got into it, they found it really relaxing. And they said it was like having a warm bath, or it was like respite from the day-to-day world. It was like that little oasis of calm. And they found it really relaxing. So they came out feeling refreshed. So Yeah, it looks like there are benefits, not just for creativity, but in stress reduction.
Yeah, that is fascinating. But in terms of creativity, it also looks like, I presume, that letting yourself get bored can actually propel major achievements and new discoveries and all sorts of stimulations in your life, yeah?
Well, I often think, you know, would man have invented things like bread and fire, you know, if they hadn't been curious and bored? I mean, bread is such an amazing thing. Who thought of getting that yeasty stuff and mixing it with water? You know, it's such an incredible thing that somebody must have been, you know, really bored and trying to find ways to stimulate and find ways to entertain themselves to come up with something like that. So I do think that we need that downtime to play around with ideas in our head, play around with physical objects and come up with creative solutions and creative ideas.
Dr. Sandy Mann has been with us. Can I just ask you a question before we go on your new book? I noticed it's coming out, Why Do I Feel Like an Imposter?
Sure.
Imposter syndrome, and I think you call it IS. I didn't know it had an abbreviation already, but we've all heard about it. I was reading that despite people being aware of imposter syndrome, that makes little difference to them feeling like imposters in life. Now, I know I've asked you a big question. I'm just wondering what does make a difference if people who have the syndrome can actually recover.
It's a very good question, because part of the problem is that you can know about it academically and you can read about it, but then you think, well, yeah, but actually I really am the genuine imposter. Yeah, I get it for everybody else. Everybody else is really amazing and, you know, it's just them. But actually, I really am the real thing. I really am the imposter. So what I've tried to do in this book is to break that down and to show how it works and to educate people to show that, yeah, if you think you're an imposter, you probably aren't, and this is why. And I think that's the first way to deal with it, really, is to actually recognise and accept that maybe you're better than you think you are.
I really am the imposter. I'm sure that's a feeling many people know. And thank you for that thumbnail description of what's in your book. And thank you also for your time.
No problem. That was a real pleasure.